Hello, everyone, and welcome to Because Hope Matters Radio. You're on the network where we provide hope and support for families journeying through cancer, Alzheimer's, deployment, and beyond. Marianne Makakau with BecauseHopeMatters.com and Rob Harris with RobCares.com are your co-hosts. You can tune into the show every Monday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time and catch the podcast on blogtalkradio.com/BecauseHopeMatters.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Because Hope Matters Radio. This is Marianne Makakau with my co-host, Rob Harris. I'm coming to you from Fort Walton Beach, Florida, and Rob is coming out of Orlando, Florida. We are bringing to you tonight the gift of education as well as the gift of laughter. Today I made a post talking about laughter being a vacation of sorts. So I am looking forward tonight to Lawrence Strang and Susan Gonzalez giving us a staycation in humor this evening, as well as an intense and wonderful education about finding the perks inside cancer. How often do you hear the words healthy, happy, and cancer mentioned in the same sentence? They have created innovative ways to show cancer survivors that that can be done, to believe in the gift of it, and to celebrate it. In their side, their book, 100 Perks of Having Cancer Plus 100 Health Tips for Surviving It. Both have transformed their cancer diagnosis into an engine of positivity. Born out of personal blogs and a relationship that began online, they have become inspirational vessels for families and patients around the nation confronting cancer. Tonight we'll talk with Susan about her battle and how she began using natural treatment methods as well as her knowledge to transform her own cancer journey, and how these two women, worlds apart in different countries, came together to deliver the power of positive thinking. Lauren began her journey also on a blog touting the exercise benefits, nutrition, medicine, and supplements to healthy living inside cancer and after. So tonight we'll have humor and inspiration as well as the challenges that patients and families face inside cancer. Before we start talking about that, I'm going to pass the mic over to Rob for our usual caregiver tip of the week. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Marianne. Hi, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend and a great upcoming week. Tonight's caregiver tip is actually the last caregiver tip that I offer in my upcoming book. Here's a shameless promotion for it called We're in This Together, A Caregiver's Guide, which will be out in a couple of months. And it's in honor of our guest tonight. And what the tip is has to do with what we normally go through in life. We focus on work. We focus on family, our professional careers, our selected forms of recreation, whatever it may be. Many of us detest Mondays. We live for Fridays. We relish the weekends. But when your life's interrupted with a cancer diagnosis, your world suddenly is turned upside down. It changes. Everything changes. And what was important to you then suddenly is very unimportant to you when you're dealing with a chronic and catastrophic illness for the patient as well as for the caregiver. You no longer take things for granted. That's one of the things that we learn very quickly, is the things that were very important to us no longer are. So who has the most toys, who has the most jewelry, whatever it may be, those are completely minor. They mean nothing. What is extremely precious is every single day of your life. You view the world differently. Your role that you play changes. And many times for the better. So one of the things that cancer does bring is a very positive outlook for those that survive as well as for the caregivers that were involved. And that's where it has a great correlation to tonight's guests based on the book that they've written, which I think everybody will hopefully learn a lot about tonight and buy and enjoy. So with that, I turn it back to Marianne.
I couldn't agree more with your tip, Rob. It's so true that whether you're in the caregiver seat or you're the patient, it transforms the way that you look about life and the way that you see the small miracles every day that you might otherwise have never noticed. So thank you for that tip.
Sure.
So to begin, I want to ask Lawrence and Susan to give us just an elevator summary for both of you of how you arrived at creating this book and what you bring to the book in terms of your background knowledge as well as your personal experiences. And just give our listeners a sort of an elevator summary of getting to know you both. Let's start with Florence.
Okay. Well, I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer in April of 2011. And like many people, when you're diagnosed with a life-threatening illness like that, I went through the stages of grieving. For about 6 months, I experienced, you know, depression, anger, bargaining with God, and so on. And about 6 months into it, when I had just had my third chemo, I remember lying in bed and feeling very, very sick and very, very sorry for myself. I was having a real pity party. And a thought suddenly occurred to me that I was not helping myself to get well by focusing on the negative and by dwelling in these negative emotions. I am a psychologist, a registered psychologist, and I'm a firm believer in the mind-body connection and how your thoughts and your emotions can impact on your physical health. So at that point in time, I said to myself, you know, Flo, you're going to have to start feeling better about this. You're going to have to look at the positive side of having cancer. And, of course, that's not easy. But I challenged myself to try to find something positive in the experience. And the first thing that came to my mind was that in the 6 months since I had been diagnosed, not once did I have to wash the dishes because I had a fabulous support team, my sisters, my friends. Even when I was feeling good, somebody would always volunteer to wash the dishes. And that made me smile. So I thought to myself, you know, if finding one perk of having cancer can bring a smile to my face, then I'm going to try to find 100 perks of having cancer. And to honor that commitment, I decided I would blog it. That's how my whole project got started. It was a little project just to help me keep my spirits up. And then in the blogosphere, I discovered Susan, who I thought was smart and funny, and she just has so much knowledge about the health tips and you know, ways to help survive cancer. So I'll pass it over to Susan, and she can tell you how we then linked up and how we went from being breast cancer bloggers to being co-authors.
So thanks for having us, by the way. And I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer in 2005, and I'm a registered nurse, so immediately I thought, This is not going to take me. I'm going to fight this. I have to arm myself with knowledge, and that's how I sort of tackle my my difficulties. I have to make a plan, arm myself with knowledge, and execute. So my knowledge was finding things that I could do to reduce my risk of reoccurrence, to finding small things that I could do with my diet, things every day that I could do to help me get through chemo. Help me to maybe get through it not using so much medication. Not that medication's a bad thing. We all need that when it's available, when there's nothing wrong with needing it. But there are other ways to combat the symptoms of chemo. So I went out looking for those. And as I found these things, I was amazed that not everybody knew about them. I was coming into my oncologist's office saying, well, you know, I'd really like to start, you know, using mushrooms. I really would like to start, I'd like to do acupuncture, this, that. And I started mentioning all these things, and the doctor really was not that interested in what I had to say. And nobody that had gone through chemo and cancer really knew anything about it. And I said, I have to tell people about this. So as I would uncover each little truth, I would want to tell everybody. So I started blogging, and I started blogging recipes, different things that people could do during chemo and after to reduce their risk of reoccurrence, things that they could do for nausea that were natural. And it just started as a blog like that. So Florence found me, and you know, when somebody comments on your blog, I don't know if you read a lot of blogs, but when somebody comments on your blog, you check them out and you go over to their blog and you see what they're doing over there. And I loved Florence's writing and the way she wrote, and I just thought she was funny, too. She mentioned, you know, that I was funny and smart. She forgot pretty. So I'm going to tell her she's funny and smart and pretty. Okay?
So, I have to ask, who is this Florence you're talking about? I'm so used to you calling me Flo.
All right, Flo.
It sounds strange.
I thought, we had to be, proper in the beginning. Okay, Flo. So we blogged back and forth, and all of a sudden I get this email in my email box, and it's from Florence Strang. And I just thought she was a superstar. I'm like, why is she emailing me? Like, I feel so special. So her email said, Susan, will you marry me? And then she said, what I'm actually proposing is that we write a book together. And I'm thinking to myself, and I emailed her back, I would rather marry you. Writing a book just seemed like a huge, daunting task. But she was very persuasive. So I said, of course, let's write a book together. And then we started working on the book, even though we live in two different countries and we live 2,500 miles away from each other.
Now Susan, are we going to have to ask, did you request a prenup for this authorship?
No, but I really should have, because I went to visit her, and she's got a pretty nice house and pretty nice setup there in Newfoundland.
And who says online relationships don't work? Look at us.
You know, if you'd like, Marion and I could kind of like sit back and let you guys talk for the next hour, because it sounds like you guys could run this entire radio show.
Well, it's so funny because it was a weird relationship, because we immediately felt like we had known each other all our lives. And it's funny because just today, Flo emailed me, and for some reason, Facebook thinks that I'm Flo and Flo is me.
Yeah.
So
it's
Facebook
true.
Recognizes our faces as the same person. So it's like Flo emailed again, that Facebook thinks I'm you. And it's just funny. People think we look like each other.
Yeah, it's really strange because we'd never met, and then people start telling us that we look alike. And while Susan was here in Newfoundland in November, I think it was, we did a TV interview together, and my cousin was watching it, and Susan was being interviewed, and my own cousin thought it was me. And people were saying, but you don't just look alike, your mannerisms and how you move your bodies, everything. So we figure we must have been soul sisters in another life.
So you were sisters from another mother.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand this look-alike thing. Marion and I got to meet you in Nashville at the Women's Cancer Survivors Convention. Susan, you're a fiery redhead. Flo, you're a brunette. I'm struggling with this look-alike piece, but personality-wise, you guys are a mirror image of each other. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Well, you haven't seen me in my red-hot wig.
I was going to say, on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, she is a redhead.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I didn't realize that.
So, that should be the photograph on your author's page then. Because I'm looking at your website, and it's the brunettes and the redheads. So I, like Rob, was struggling for that. So you need to swap that out at least 3 times a week.
Yeah, we need to do that. You're right.
All right, well, let's get down to some serious journalism here, if we could. Flo, you were reading Susan's blog, which I believe, Susan, if I'm right, it's called The Savvy Sister, Health Changes in Healthy Living. And I'm curious, Flo, your area of focus, you said you're a registered psychologist. What made you start to turn toward healthier alternatives as an area of interest for you?
Okay, well, with my diagnosis of stage 3 breast cancer, I immediately wanted to find out as much information as I could about, the prognosis and statistics and so on. And when I learned from my doctor and from my research that the 5-year survival rate for this type of cancer is just over 50%, and the chances of a reoccurrence, I think, are about 30%, that really scared me. And I thought, at first I felt helpless, like, oh, no, I'm going to die. There's nothing I can do about this. And especially when the treatments, the chemo and radiation and everything had ended, then I felt like, okay, I'm on my own now. What do I do? And And doctors, and most doctors, or my doctors at least, you know, didn't tell me anything that I could do. What can I do to help increase my chances of surviving and reduce my risk of a reoccurrence? And that's where Susan, when I found her blog, she had a wealth of information. There was so much information there. And then if I wanted to know something else, like should I do this, what should I eat, what type of food, whatever, she could always answer those questions for me. So I thought she would be the ideal person when the idea came to write a book about the perks of having cancer, which is more or less looking at the attitude and, you know, your positive thinking. I thought if we combine that with her healthy living tips, then it's not just a book, it's actually a resource for body, mind, and spirit.
Go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just going to say, if I could follow up with that, being a registered psychologist and focusing your attention on the positive and trying to remove those negative emotions, you had a little bit more of an uphill climb than many cancer patients did or do, specifically along with being a single mom at the time, children, one child with autism. How did you focus your attention on the positive when you had so many balls to juggle, so many things to deal with and take care of? It sounds like your challenges were significant.
Yes, you are right, and it's certainly not easy to be a single parent. I have three children, and at the time, my daughter, Caitlin, who was the oldest, she was 16, Donovan was 14, and my youngest son, Ben, was then 6. He's now 8 years old and has severe autism. So there, I was no stranger to facing challenges, I assure you. And, of course, I was feeling down, and I felt that it was so unfair that, especially being Ben's mom, my youngest child with autism, like I worried about my other children, but I just could not understand or think about how Ben would survive without me. But as you said, like working as a psychologist for so many years, and I practiced a form of counseling called cognitive behavioral therapy, and basically the underlying premise is what you think is how you feel. So if you change what you think, if you change your thoughts, you can actually change your emotional state and change your feelings. So one of the tools I used to help me to get positive or maintain a positive attitude was affirmations. So all while I was going through treatments, I would say to myself every day, I give thanks for my full recovery and perfect health, and I'd repeat that over and over. And even though full recovery and perfect health seemed way beyond my reach sometimes, I just spoke those words every day as if they were true, and eventually I actually felt the truth of it, and I still say that affirmation every day.
I'm looking at one of your tweets from today that you have posted at 100 Perks, and it talks about being yourself, I believe. If I'm trying to bring it up here, note to self, it says, my browser's not going so fast, note to self, if you're tired of starting over, stop giving up. obviously, your affirmations included many messages that helped you to move on and keep going, Flo. Did you have your children at the ages that they are? You know, me being a children's author, touching the kids inside of us in these difficult circumstances, including cancer, is to bring the children into being empowered as well, having their voice. So with your psychology background, how did you involve them in having a voice and feeling affirmed positively while you were going through it?
Mm-hmm. I actually talk a little bit about that in the book because some of the perks of having cancer for me were seeing my children in a whole new light and developing a deeper bond with them. And I think before, to be honest with you, before I got cancer, I did everything for my kids. You know, I would clean the room. I'm ashamed to say it. I spoiled them rotten. You know, I'd clean the room for them. I'd cook. I'd pick up after them. They didn't have to do anything. And I was always taking care of the children. But then after I got cancer, they became my caregivers. So I think that helped them, and they certainly learned a whole lot of new skills. And I think it empowered them that, you know, that Caitlin, my oldest daughter, and Donovan, both of them, came and sat with me through chemo. And I think that did, you know, somehow that helped to empower them and gave them some control and felt that they were doing something positive for me.
No doubt.
You know, I'm sorry, go ahead, Marianne.
I just said no doubt. I've seen that with other parents as well. That's great that you did that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I remember specifically each time my wife had cancer, and she had cancer twice, but the second time we decided to do a family event, and that was when my wife was losing her hair and she was going bald. My two sons, who were teenagers at the time, and I decided to shave our heads. Well, the person that was shaving my head is a friend of ours. She owned a studio at the time. And so she shaved the top of my head, and I looked like Larry from the Three Stooges, and she wouldn't finish the job. Now, Susan, I understand that when you were losing your hair, you did something similar. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I'm kind of a take-charge person. I have been all my life. I grew up in a large family. We kind of had to fend for ourselves, so I think I just developed that type of personality. But I knew that I was going for chemo. I started chemo August 14th of 2005. I remember the day. And I was told that I would lose my hair 14 days after starting my first treatment. So I had very long hair at the time. My hair is kind of thick and wavy. And I couldn't imagine that much hair falling out. I said, I'm going to make a total mess. So I'm just going to shave my head. And I thought to myself, you know, I actually got the idea from, you know, that movie G.I. Jane with Demi Moore? I'm like, that is so cool, man. She took the freaking razor and she shaved her head. That's like wicked awesome. I'm like, I'm going to do that. You know, it's empowering. And that in that movie, she actually does that to empower herself.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to shave my own head. Not shave my own head. I'm going to have it shaved so that when it falls out, it won't be so messy and I can kind of handle it. And then when we got there, the guy was really nice. And normally, I guess it's a very solemn occasion when women are shaving their head. But I said, my sister was with me, and I said, you know what? I wonder what I would look like with a mohawk. And I said to the guy, could you give me a mohawk? And then his eyes lit up, and he got all excited, and he's like, oh, yeah, I can do that. You know, he had the spray, and he sprayed it, and he, you know, cut spikes in it, and then we took funny pictures and stuff. And my sister and I were laughing hysterically, and it could have been a very sad day. And, you know, for a lot of women, it is. For me, I chose to make this something a little bit different. So we took pictures and had fun with it. And there's actually some pictures on my my blog site. If you go to the About page, you can see me with my mohawk.
It's hysterical, I must tell you.
I mean, how many people can say they had a mohawk and they know what they look like, you know? I just see those opportunities. Like, I'm going to take that opportunity, even if it's not something not so good.
Susan, you mentioned messages that you get back on your blog from individuals, and Rob and I can attest as authors how much it means to get comments back and not feel like you're writing in a vacuum.
Right.
So who is the most impressive, or who did they come from, or what did the message say that most has impressed you since you started this, and not the one from each other initially?
I have got messages that say, you know, thanks for writing. You know, I couldn't find information like this. You know, I'm also going through cancer and looking for alternative treatments during chemo. And I've had a lot of people just, you know, thank me for writing what I'm writing. And that makes me feel really good. That's the reason I'm doing it. That's actually the reason you don't get fortune and fame by blogging. You get to tell other people what you know, and maybe it'll resonate with them, maybe it won't, but at least you're putting it out there and just sharing information.
I was a little starstruck at one point early on in my blogging when Dr. Bernie Siegel found my blog and posted a comment. I had blogged something about positive attitude. I can't remember exactly. But, yes, and I had read his book, actually, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, was my Bible when I was going through treatments. I brought it to all my treatments, and I'd read it, and I've actually read it several times. So when I looked down there, and I was there, no freaking way, that can't be me, Bernie Siegel. And anyway, I started talking to him and emailed him back and so on, and it was actually the Bernie, and he wrote the foreword for our book. So that was that's probably the most impressive comment I've had.
he wrote
an endorsement on two of my covers on two of my books as well, and I had the same kind of experience as you, that when he wrote, I just said, no way, and I almost fell off my chair. You know, it's like he really answered me, but I had slugged him, and he answered back. And it's so funny because when you really look at these people that are in it with the heart matter as he is, they're just people like you and I. You know, they're people that want to make a difference, people that bring their expertise into it and want to share. But if it's the right connection, it's really about the giving that matters. You know, just like we're saying tonight about the attitude matters. That's the admiration I have for individuals like him and others that are like-minded.
Yes, absolutely. He's very personable.
You know, it almost feels like we're going up the blogging food chain. Susan, you said that you were enamored with Flo when you were reading hers. Now Flo's saying she's enamored with Bernie Siegel, and so it just keeps going up the ladder there. So.
Yeah, but I'm not cheating on you, Susan. I'm not cheating on you with Bernie.
That's all right. If you're going to cheat with anyone, it might as well be Bernie. I totally approve.
Remember what I said, Susan, prenup. Is this all about prenup?
Well, it shows you how much we're alike, because when I was going through chemo, I actually would listen to Bernie's CDs. He has a great one about building your immunity, you know, through guided meditation. So, you know, Flo and I really hit on the same type of resources when we were going through treatment.
That makes a lot of sense. I think we all turn to the same folks that can guide us through these different things. And I think for most of us, Bernie Siegel is somewhere in our lives, one way or another. I know I followed him, and I was honored when he started to follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. So I think we all have somebody that we look to and just go, wow. But as Marianne said, they're just like you and me, and they all have the same passion, and it's a wonderful thing. It's a fraternal group.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
So let me ask a question, if I can. Did either of you have to do inpatient chemotherapy?
No, I did not.
I'm sorry, what was that? What type of chemo? Inpatient
hospitalization.
Oh,
did
I'm
you
sorry.
Have...
Yeah, no, not inpatient.
Okay. Because one of the things that I know that we experienced a great deal is, and especially in the hospital, but I know we also experienced it at home, was a lack of sleep and what a lack of sleep does to you when you're dealing with a significant illness and the chemicals that are coursing through your body. Did either of you, and I'll start with you, Flo, did you ever have difficulty sleeping? How did that affect you if you did have that, and what did you do to combat that sleeplessness?
I did, especially first when I was diagnosed, of course, just the worry and the emotional turmoil that I was experiencing really threw off my sleep. And I found meditation. I do this. I also am trained in Reiki, and I administer self-Reiki or do healing meditations. And that would help settle me. I also discovered something you can buy off the shelf, which is a natural substance, I think. Susan, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Melatonin.
Mm-hmm.
And melatonin is something that I think that your body naturally produces. And you can take this like kind of like a supplement thing at night just to help you get off to sleep. So those are two of the things I did.
Yeah, I didn't have too much trouble with falling asleep, but I know my body, and I know that if I don't get exercise and I don't, you know, eat the right things, that I have trouble sleeping. So for me, it was just making sure, even through chemo, that I did some type of exercise, even if I just got up and walked around the house for 10 minutes, you know, just something to kind of keep my body in rhythm. So that was what I had to do.
And earlier, Susan, you had mentioned a topic that's very interesting to me. Last year, I spoke at the Annie Appleseed Conference in West Palm, which is coming up again soon. Ann Fonfa does an amazing job with that conference. And Marianne also spoke at that the year prior. And one of the lectures that was most impactful to me was the topic of mushrooms. I knew nothing about their medicinal properties. And being that you're into the nutritional side of life, and I know there's so many different natural, organic ways of dealing with illnesses. Tell us a little bit about mushrooms and maybe some of the other herbs and spices that you might suggest people look into.
Sure. Mushrooms is a great place to start. You know, some people don't like the way they taste, but you can actually take them in pill form. One that I recommend is shiitake, maitake, reishi blend. So it's three different mushrooms, and they're dried and concentrated and put in a capsule form, and you can take it that way so you don't have to eat them if you don't like them. Another way that you can eat your mushrooms is, which the way that I do it in, is in maple syrup. There's a company that makes a turkey tail extract, and it's infused in Vermont maple syrup. So you can take a teaspoon of that and, you know, I put it in my tea. So I'm getting my mushrooms that way. And they do. They have amazing properties. In fact, the turkey tail is being studied for prevention of recurrence of breast cancer. They're actually growing a specific crop of turkey tail mushroom to use on women to look. And it does appear to have some effect on the reduction of incidence of recurrence. These are women that have had breast cancer, to prevent them from getting it again. So there's a lot we don't know, and a lot of it has to do with food. I'm certified in plant-based nutrition. I've eaten plant-based for probably about 6 years now. And there's just so much that we don't know about how our body processes food and the stress that the body undergoes when we don't eat the right kinds of food. So mushrooms is just a good example of one of those foods that's out there that really is a medicine.
Now, I could dovetail on that for just a second. There are a lot of people that don't like taking pills, and especially one pill, because it always repeats up on us, is fish oil. And I've learned that a substitute for fish oil is chia seeds. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. There's a great chapter in our book about that, too. I don't eat any animal products, so I don't take fish oil capsules. And actually, most of the fish oil capsules that are out there are from processed. They're not healthy fish. They're farmed fish. The omega-3 fatty acids that we get from the fish are processed and high heated. So a lot of times they're just not as readily available to the body as eating a whole food would be. And that's the premise behind eating a whole plant-based diet. So the omega-3 fatty acids are important because they reduce inflammation. And inflammation is the core at every chronic illness, heart disease, arthritis, cancer. So we know the inflammatory process causes our bodies to develop these chronic illnesses. If we can increase the amount of foods that act as anti-inflammatories, and omega-3s are one of them, then we're much better off and we can combat those illnesses. So fish oil capsules contain the omega-3 fatty acids. They also contain other things that are contained in fish oil that are helpful to heart disease, but you can get those in other foods. Chia seeds are one great example of a whole food that contains an abundance of omega-3 fatty acids. One tablespoon of chia seeds has as much omega-3 as 5 fish oil capsules. And now
wow.
You can also buy the chia seed oil, which you only need a teaspoon of the oil, has as much omega-3 fatty acids as 5 fish oil capsules. So now, you know, you can a teaspoon of oil, you can put that in anything. You can, you know, put it in salad dressings. You can you know, when you're cooking, you can put that in. It's a little pricey, so you want to make sure that you do get that whole the teaspoon, you know, and use it wisely. But it's just another easy way that you don't have to use the fish oil capsules, and there's no bad aftertaste either.
And you mentioned about the, Susan,
you were talking about the health benefits and how we really still don't have a clear sense of how powerful they are and how they may contribute to not only treatment but possibly a cure. And you're making me think of the Sean Connery movie many years back, 92, where he was in the Amazon jungle looking for the cure for cancer. And
yeah, yeah.
It's so interesting to think about, you know, movies like that that sort of provoke our thinking and make us look at things a little bit differently. The other one I'm thinking of as you're speaking is the one where William Hurt plays a patient called the doctor. He becomes ill and suddenly becomes the patient. And I wonder for yourself, Susan, when you became the patient, did that change the way that you now nurse your patients?
It didn't change the way. I'd like to think that I'm always a compassionate and very conscientious nurse, but it definitely changed the way I felt. First let me say, nurses make the worst patients. We're just terrible. We're horrible because we don't like, you know, being sick. We don't like being on the other side. But I gained a lot of knowledge and I gained a lot of insight in being in the bed rather than standing next to the bed. So it changed my thought process, but hopefully I'm better for it.
Definitely, you had mentioned that you turned toward meditation and spiritual exercise, and you mentioned Reiki, and I'm familiar with Tai Chi. How do those things, for those that are listening and they're not familiar with what those are, what does that do to help somebody who's feeling kind of helpless, more like a victim of cancer, to change their perspective and become healthier in mind, body, spirit?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, any form of spiritual exercise can help to relieve stress. So you can practice meditation, a guided meditation. Susan mentioned, you know, buying CDs that Bernie Siegel produced that you can listen to those and actually guide you through the whole meditation process. Just focusing on your breathing and doing deep breathing is another form of meditation. Prayer, you know, is a simple spiritual exercise that many of us do. Reiki is a more like a form of energy healing. But any type of spiritual exercise that, you know, brings you peace and brings you a sense of well-being and peace actually helps to turn off the stress response in the body. So it's not just a matter of, you know, feeling better or feeling more at ease. It actually has a physical effect on your body. So as you know, when you're under stress, your body is in fight or flight mode. And, you know, the cortisol is being released into your body and adrenaline, your heart is pounding. You know, all these very physical things are happening in your body. And when your body is in that stressed state, it is not the best time for healing. And the body can only really heal itself and recover when it's in a relaxed state. So I'm getting around to the point, meditation, prayer, those spiritual exercises are not just about, you know, your mind feeling better. They actually have an impact on your physical health.
And if I might just interject, you know, we as humans, there are many facets to us, but the three that come together to complete perfect health is physical, mental, spiritual. Without all three pieces, you're not completely healthy.
And when we talk about spiritual, we're not talking about religion. For some people, their spirituality is very strongly linked to their religion. But I think spirituality can be anything that connects you to your spirit, that connects you to the divine. And for me, I often say, you know, spending time in my garden is one of my best spiritual exercises. So it's whatever it is for the person that brings them that sense of peace and connectedness.
I'm looking at your book and some of the tips inside the, your perks, as your 100 perks are listed. And one of them, on perk number 21, is I didn't have to buy a Halloween costume. I'm going to guess that they came from Susan, but I could be mistaken. So would the right person please claim it and tell me what that tip meant?
Okay. Actually, I wrote all 100 perks. And Susan wrote 100 health tips. So all of the perks
come from me.
Oh,
that's right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and in
sorry
the book,
that.
The book is laid out in such a way that I have a perk, one of the perks numbered 1 to 100, and it's only a page or so, most of them, and following that, Susan has a health tip, which is somehow related to the perk I just spoke about. But anyway, yeah, one of the perks I discovered is the Halloween that I had cancer. I didn't have to worry about buying a Halloween costume because, let's face it, what could be scarier than a bald, middle-aged woman?
And did you go to the door as a bald, middle-aged woman when kids came for candy?
I think that would be just a little too scary, a little too cruel. I just freaked out my friends.
So let me ask you, Susan, being a nurse, I'm sure that research is a big part of your life. Tell me, for those folks that are fairly new at being a patient or their caregivers, what kind of research should they go online and look to do? What sites do you suggest? What thoughts do you have that would make their journey through the very confusing world for some of the Internet a little bit easier to navigate?
Yeah. Well, and again, there's a chapter in the book about how to read research because it is difficult, and a lot of times the news wants to just report what will get your attention. So they're not really being very very good about giving you good information. They just want to get your attention to watch the program. So studies that don't have a whole lot of people in them. Say a study was done and they had 10 people in the study. Well, that's not one that I'm really going to pay attention to. Any website where someone's trying to sell their book and, you know, they did research saying that what is in their book is true, you know, you can read it, but you may want to find several other sources that also support what they're saying. Now, for my website, when I find a piece of research, I always want to find two more pieces of research that support what I'm writing from different sources. And that's really a good way to do it. Just reading it off of one site doesn't necessarily make it true. So multiple sites saying the same thing are important. And, you know, look at the site that you're on. How credible is it? You know, everyone goes to WebMD, but, you know, WebMD, they're a for-profit. You know, they sell ads. So I would suggest finding, you know, at least two or three pieces of research that support what you're going to do.
And my radio host, Marianne, is also a researcher. So, Marianne, let me pose the same question to you. What recommendations do you have?
I think she just gave some excellent recommendations. Obviously, the other part of it is making sure that their research is current and knowing that research can change quickly in terms of the outcomes. We get smarter, we get more informed, we have changes in what we know. Just think of the food pyramid and how what we believed so many years ago, in essence, really wasn't the healthy choice for us, and that's been reinvented. So we have, you know, numerous ways of researching much more now than we did years ago. I used to go to the libraries at the colleges and have to dig the books off the shelves, and now we can just go, and I'm dating myself, but now we can just go on the computer and research, which you pointed out that, you know, it's important to look at the site and is it credible, and does it have comparisons for us to look at in terms of who's supporting and backing that research. So great suggestions there. I wanted to transition for a moment back to the story that Flo shared at the beginning about her autistic child. You have a blog post that you did that you called The Sensory Garden, I think it was called. Let's see. Yes, and you talk about when Ben was first diagnosed and your struggle to accept his diagnosis. And I wonder if because you had gone through that previously with struggling to accept a difficult diagnosis and really getting a grip on what was happening within him, if that, in your eyes, compared to other cancer survivors, made it in any way easier for you to accept your own diagnosis of cancer?
I'm not sure that it made it easier for me to accept the cancer diagnosis, but I can say the opposite, certainly, that getting cancer made me it made it easier to accept Ben's diagnosis of autism. And what I mean by that is after Ben was diagnosed, he was diagnosed at 3 years old. So by the time I was diagnosed with cancer, he was 3 years then that I knew he had autism. And for those 3 years, I researched it to death. I became trained in as many different therapies as I could. I became a self-made expert in autism. And I figured that if I could hit on the right thing, I could fix Ben's autism. And that was my goal in life. It felt like my whole purpose was to somehow make this better so that he wouldn't have to struggle with autism. And after, it's funny because how Rob started the show was talking about how your perspective changes. And my whole perspective changed then because I saw a different side of Ben and I realized that he's perfect the way he is and he don't need me to fix him. As a mom, I just have to help Ben develop to his greatest potential, whatever that is. So it changed, yeah, cancer changed my view of his autism and certainly helped me to accept it.
Let me turn to Susan for a second. Susan, your husband, I believe, was your caregiver, and you being a nurse, I'm sure you run into caregivers all the time. What was it like for your husband being a caregiver to you? I mean, you're certainly an introverted, quiet individual. So I can imagine the dialogue, but I can only picture the dialogue between your caregiver and yourself throughout.
Yeah,
Share a little bit about that.
Like I said, I'm a very bad patient. I don't like people taking care of me. I tried to be very self-sufficient. And, you know, looking back, I probably did a real disservice to him because he really needed to take care of me. You know, he felt very helpless. And we've talked about this, you know, recently. He felt helpless and he needed to do something for me. And unfortunately, I was in the mindset that I could do everything myself. And it was unfortunate, and I'll be honest, it was very unfortunate that I didn't accept more help from him at that time. We were going through a crazy time. He had a business, and his building burned down when I was diagnosed as well. So he was dealing with stress from all over the place. And we, you know, as many of us do, we look back and we say, how did we ever get through that? We each did what we thought we had to do. Now, having recognized that, he's more involved in things that I'm doing now. So, you know, I recognize that. But that's just honesty. Anyone out there that thinks that they can do it themselves, you probably are better off allowing someone to help you. It helps not only you, but it helps the person helping as well.
Absolutely.
As a nurse, what suggestions do you have for the new caregivers that are listening out there that go into a hospital room for the first time, go into a doctor's office for the first time, they've never experienced the world of caregiving before? What role do you recommend they take? How assertive or submissive should they be? Whatever advice you can give, I think, would be helpful for the listeners.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to know the person who's being treated, And obviously, if it's a spouse, you have good communication, and you know that person pretty well. And I think, Rob, I think you touch on this so well in your book, The Caregiver Story, that you have to know when to step in and when not to step in. And I think a good open communication is vital in that situation to find out what does that person need. Sometimes you can, you know, maybe go overboard looking at different alternative therapies. Maybe that's not what that person is interested in. But I would say, for sure, open communication and finding out really what is needed. And don't be afraid to be assertive.
You know, that's pretty much life, isn't it? That learn to be assertive and knock on the doors that you need to, and do it with boldness and confidence, because otherwise you're sort of in the dark about things, or having to do things yourself and not get the right information. And I'm thinking back to your question about research. One of my favorite medical updates I get every day is by Sanjay Gupta from WebMD. It's wonderful updates from every area of medicine each day in my inbox, and he's actually on my list. I want him on our program. If you're hearing this, Dr. Gupta, we want you on. And I would like to know from each of you, where is your favorite medical update list? Who do you go to for that? What's your site that you tag?
There's actually a new one that I really like. It's called Medivisor, Medivizor. And what you do is you put in the areas that you're interested in. So I would put in like nutrition, breast cancer, and then they send you the new research and the updates just on what you've clicked on, just the areas that you want to know. And I love it. And it comes right to my email, and I know that I'm getting the information that I streamline, so I don't have to read through everything.
Yeah.
And I just go to Susan's blog.
It's almost like cheating, isn't it?
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Flo. I also have a little team out there. I have my little followers, and they'll go, ooh, what about this? Research this. And then I have to research and research. Somebody just sent me something on vitamin D. A huge study was just done showing that when they correct the vitamin D, it really doesn't improve mortality in breast cancer survivors. You know, so I got to look through that. Don't worry, everybody. Keep taking your vitamin D. I have to piece through this. It's like a 30-page study that I've got to go wade through and figure out what's going on.
My first reaction was my wife was going to get on the phone and call you as soon as the show was over, so thank you for that.
No, please keep taking your vitamin D. That's the one pill I recommend everyone take.
Yeah. Well, Flo, I've got a question for you. When we were all in Nashville together at the conference, one of the topics that seemed to be the favorite of a lot of the people that were there had to do with the Kathy Latour presentation. And Kathy's one of our regulars, and she'll be on with us next week. One of the topics that she spoke about is the fear of reoccurrence. Is that something that a lot of people go through? And what are the ways to deal with that? Because I can imagine every time you get a little sense of something doesn't feel right, I have a little headache, I have a little pain here or there, the word cancer just automatically pops into your head. Is that something that you go through? Is it something that most people go through? And what can they do about that?
Yeah, I think most people do live with that fear after a cancer diagnosis. It's always there in the back of your head, you know, what if, what if. And certainly for after my treatment's finished, I would say for the next maybe 6 to 8 months, every little ache and pain, I thought, oh, no, it's back. I can remember actually calling up my oncologist and saying, I need a bone scan right away. There's something wrong with my arm. And she's speaking to me, and she said, well, what did you do when you get out? I said, well, I came home, I got out of the car, I shoveled the snow, and, oh, okay, wait, yes, it's probably some shoveling snow. So, Yeah, people do tend, but for me at least, I'm finding that it's not always there in my mind like it was. As time goes on, it doesn't take up so much space in my head. And I think, I don't know, just trying to let go of fear. Fear is not a good thing. Fear is not good for the body. So I think just trying to let go of that fear and just trust and do everything that you can in your own power to prevent that reoccurrence.
And, you know, faith, you can't have faith and fear cannot coexist in your brain. So if you can try, and I don't mean faith, you know, religious faith, like going to church, although that is one way to get faith, but just knowing that everything's going to be okay, trusting that everything's going to be okay, that dispels the fear for me.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So let me ask, and I'll turn this over to you first, Flo. What was it like for your families to learn that you had a diagnosis, to learn that, you know, sometimes you think, well, my kids always think that I'm immortal, and now I'm facing something that defines my mortality. What was their learning experience like, and how, if anything, has that changed them?
Well, when I think back about my family, when you guys spoke about being, you know, you, Rob, as a caregiver, and Susan spoke about her husband. Of course, I'm a single parent, and I don't have a husband. So in this case for me, it's my caregivers were, I didn't have one main person. My parents became my caregivers. My children were my caregivers. My friends became my caregivers. You know, there was just, I had a wonderful support network. And coincidentally, I actually met a man and fell in love at almost exactly the same time that I was diagnosed with cancer. So he became, in a brand new relationship, one of my caregivers as well. I think for me it was just, you know, accepting and allowing those people to take care of me, because, you know, you can feel pretty helpless. So you have to be accepting of that.
And Susan, if I could follow up with you, I know for me, becoming a caregiver changed my life completely, and all for the better. I learned to appreciate each and every single day. What was the change, or did your husband feel there was a change in his life as a result of your situation?
Yeah, I mean, definitely appreciating every day and maybe not waiting to do things that we wanted to do. And he's also, he's really wonderful in that he allows me to do different things because he knows that my life is a little different now. I sort of do things that I never would have done before my illness, and he knows that. So he's very nice in letting me go do these crazy things. I mean, I just got back from a week in Brazil, just like on a whim, and he knows that I need to do those things because that's, you know, that's how I see my new life, is just not waiting to do things, but just doing them and enjoying it.
I was going to ask you about that because I saw your pictures posted on Facebook about you being in Brazil. I'm going, okay, I wonder if she's going to make the show.
I had the same thought, Rob.
No,
I think that was the day. I think that was the day I wrote you with a reminder saying, "Are you still planning to be on our show?"
No, I came back just for the show.
Yeah, well, we were thinking alternatively about Skype if that didn't work. So, yeah.
No, not where I was. There is no Skype.
So being you have had this fun experience recently, what is next on your list? And are you of the same mindset, Susan, of doing these sort of on-the-whim things?
What's next for me, Susan? What's next for me?
What's next for Flo? And then what's next for Susan? If there is a next for Susan, if you also take advantage of these on-the-moment things that you want to do.
No, I mean, Flo and I are working on a new project. Mm-hmm. It's the last page in the book is Cancer Plan for Life. So what we're doing is we're taking the book and we're turning it into an online cancer survivorship program. I worked 10 years in cardiac rehab, so I know that when you have an illness, it's nice to have like a rehabilitation program to look through, and people can tell you, you know, what to do and guide you towards a new lifestyle. So that's what we're trying to do. So that's where our Flo and I's next adventure is, getting this together and getting it out and available for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds fantastic. Well, are there any tips? Let me start with you, Flo. Are there any tips or any perks that you'd like to leave our audience with that we did not address in this interview?
I think the thing I'd like to leave the audience with is that attitude is a choice. And I know a lot of us inherently have, you know, a way of seeing the world. It's the glass half full or glass half empty kind of thing. But you do. You don't, you know, for anybody who's been diagnosed with cancer, you did not have a choice in getting cancer, but you do have a choice in the attitude that you bring to it. So there's always things to be grateful for. There are always reasons to smile. So I think if you just keep looking for the good and keep looking for the perks and look for the positive, it will make that whole experience a whole lot easier.
Wonderful. Thank you. And Susan, do you have a health tip to leave us with?
I would just like to say generally that there are plenty of things you can do within your lifestyle to reduce your risk of cancer, and not only that, but to reduce your risk of other chronic illnesses and just to live a happier life. Just know that you can empower yourself. If you look for small changes, it can add up to big benefits in your life.
Fantastic. Let me start again with Flo. If somebody wanted to be in touch with you or visit your website, do you have any opportunities for them to do so? If you could share website information or contact information?
Yeah, sure. My blog is perksofcancer.com, and Susan and I, our website, say related to our book that also has links to our blog, is www.100100perksofcancer.com.
Okay, and Susan, would you like to give out your personal cell phone number? No, I'm kidding.
Sure. I will. I'll be happy to. But they can contact us on the page that Flo just gave. There's a contact page. So we would love to hear from people asking questions and all. You can get to our Facebook page from there. You can follow us on Twitter from there. We're at 100perks. And Flo mentioned the 100perksofcancer.com, and you can find everything you need to know. You can even read a little excerpt from the book.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
Well, this has been a fantastic time of mixed laughter and education. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to all of your new projects that are coming up, and hopefully we'll stay in touch going forward. But thank you again, and Flo, please stay warm in Canada, and enjoy your warm weather for as long as it lasts.
Thanks. Great to talk to you.
All right. Y'all take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone. We'll see you next week at 7 p.m. with Kathy Latour returning for the quarterly segment. Next week she'll be actually talking about chemo brain, or the memory gaps that come after treatment.
Yes, please plan to join us, and if you'd like, call in. The phone number to call in on that show, as with all shows, is 646-378-0872. I'm sorry, 0802. That's 646-378-0802. And we look forward to having you joining us again next week. Have a great night, everybody.
Good night.